Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, presented by your local Hyundai dealers. This is Chicago's number one and most listened to sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. And Odyssey Station. The Score!
Top of the hour is being brought to you by DuckDuckGo. Privacy simplified. Ray, let's go.
Yo, Holmes!
Lawrence Holmes.
Holmes runs it really well.
Noon to 2.
Holmes doing what Holmes does.
On Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Yo, Holmes!
And 670thescore.com. In Odyssey Station.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
I have noticed that white guys generally don't seem to be big fans of Black Lives Matter. I know there are a lot of you here tonight. I don't really have any hard scientific data to back up my claim, but I have talked to my uncle about Colin Kaepernick, and I feel like that's a pretty good indication of the white male consensus. That never bothered me, a guy kneeling for the anthem. You know, I never felt like I had a right to be upset about that. I didn't, because I've gone to sporting events and spent the national anthem in the shitter. So, if kneeling is disrespectful, what I did in the Wrigley Field men's room in late July might have been treason. I don't know.
That is a sample of Pat Tomasulo's special, What a Time to Be Alive. It is up on YouTube right now. You can watch it for free. I'm telling you, you are going to laugh your face off. You can check out Pat on the WGN Morning News. He's also on Twitch. So for all the people on Twitch, he is there, twitch.tv/Chicago670TheScore. He joins me on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Mr. Tomasulo, how are you, sir?
I am well, Lawrence. Thank you so much. I love the marriage there of my two things, saying you're going to laugh your face off. That's the name of the big comedy fundraiser I do as well. It's like two plugs for the price of one today. That's why you're a pro. That's why you are where you are.
This is what I do, man. People don't always see it, but sometimes I drop a gem or two. It works all the time for people that I love, like you, man. Do you want to talk sports at all?
We'll talk whatever. Listen, I'm a guest on your show. We'll talk whatever you want to talk about.
All right, I don't want to talk about sports with you. I want to talk about the special, and I want to talk about sports casting. But I want to talk about the special first.
Sure.
It's really great. How long did it take you to put it together?
Somebody asked me this the other day. You know, I've been doing stand-up 12 years now, and there might be, I think there are traces of bits that I did 10 years ago or 8 years ago, but I think the thing really evolved and really kind of came together in the last 3 years or so, right? Including however the hell long we were in a pandemic, right? So I was going to do it. Actually, initially I was going to tape it in December of 2020. I was gearing up to do it. And then the pandemic hit, and that obviously shot that to hell. And then a lot of the stuff that happened, you know, like the stuff about Black Lives Matter and the stuff about the some of the other topical stuff in there, Trump, some things about that, kind of came together after the pandemic. And, I'm so glad that that it did get pushed back, because I think some of the bits in there that I really love the most kind of really only came together in the last year or so.
Okay, well, I mean, that's fair. Like, you're observing what's happening in the world and then talking about it. It's been one of the things that you've been good at for a really long time. How did you know you had an hour?
I've been headlining shows for, you know, eight, nine years. So I've been doing that long on stage consistently for almost a decade. I always heard, like, you know, the adage is, you know when you're most ready to record an hour and put it out there when you are absolutely sick of doing the jokes, right? Because when you have that hour and you've been doing it a lot, you know, you can get kind of bogged down in the minutia. Like right now, I'm trying to throw out that entire hour and start from scratch. And I'm doing material that's all new. And there's a certain excitement that you get from doing new material and seeing these bits come together. But when you've been doing the tried and tested bits, you kind of, you know, once you start getting a little tired of them, then it's time to think about, all right, how can I perfect this, put it on tape, and put it out in the world?
When did you know that this was something that you wanted to do? Like, along with doing the sports casting thing.
Yeah.
But when did you know, hey, man, I enjoy making people laugh. Let me see how far I can take it.
Well, in terms of, like, you're talking about, like, stand-up, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, when I first started at GN, and even before GN, I was never really the traditional, you know, typical, you know, sportscaster. What I mean by that is just, you know, a straighter personality. I always did stuff that was kind of on the fringes of sports. So I always knew I liked making people laugh. That was never a question. That was always something I wanted to do through sportscasting, was make it humorous. You know, I'm guessing we're around the same age. Like, we grew up in that SportsCenter era when it was Craig Kilborn and Keith Olbermann and Dan Patrick, and so many of those guys went and did other things. I always thought that would be kind of the trajectory I would go. And stand-up was always one of those things. I don't know. I was probably before I ever did stand-up, I had way too much confidence in my belief that I could do it. It was kind of one of those things where I was like, I don't know why. I just feel like I would be good at this. But it took me, it took some pushing for me to do it. I'll tell you who actually did it before me that encouraged me to do it was Annabelle Aval.
Mm-hmm.
She had always wanted to do stand-up, and then she did a show. And I was like, well, man, you know, she's telling me I can do it. So I tried it. And the first couple of shows I did were with her and Mike Toomey, who's also, by the way, if you ever get a chance to see Mike Toomey perform live, do it. The guy
is fantastic.
Single-handedly one of the funniest human beings I've ever met. I've met a lot of really famous, funny people. Mike Toomey's talent rivals any of them. So, yeah, and that's, you know, it went pretty well the first couple of times. And then you're hooked, man. Then it's like a fix that you're chasing forever. It's just to keep getting that feeling.
Well, I wanted to ask you about Anna and Mike. I don't know this for a fact, but I imagine that there isn't a news department for a show anywhere else in the country where there are three comedians who are prominently featured. And on top of that, Paul has acting background. So it's a pretty incredible group that's assembled over there around you on the morning show.
Yeah. I mean, for what we do, like, Paul Conrad is one of the quickest, funniest people I've ever worked with in my life. And then it's like, you know, the behind the scenes people too, you know, like Jeff Hoover and Brian Say and Ross McAbee, which are not, you know, names a lot of people know, because they're not Hoover's on the air a lot more than the other two guys. But yeah, even behind the scenes, it really is amazing. Like I can't believe what the hell we get away with on a daily basis over there.
It's good though, right? Like it's fun that you guys are given the latitude to be able to push some limits and have a little bit of fun in the morning.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're also keeping the lights on in that building. So I think they let us do, I think they keep getting those ad checks from the sponsors forking over a ton of money to be on the number one rated show of the market. Believe me, the second those ratings go down, they'll have a lot less patience for our shenanigans.
Yeah, but I don't think that's happening anytime soon. Pat Tomasulo joining me here. His new comedy special is out on YouTube. What a Time to Be Alive. Please, please, please bookmark it and watch it later on tonight. There's no Bulls game. You don't have to worry about that. The Cubs and White Sox are still in spring training. Watch it tonight. You will definitely enjoy it. Is there a part of the process of putting an hour together that you like? And is there a part of the process of putting an hour together that you don't?
Well, I think the best part was the recording. I mean, the recording was, you know, as a comedian, you're going to have, you know, if you're a good comedian, you're going to have way more better shows than you do bad shows. Everybody still bombs. It doesn't matter what level you're at. But there are those rare instances where, like, you're Don Larson in the World Series, and you just, you throw a, like, everything lines up, and you throw a perfect game. Like, for the taping, that was one of those nights. We had two sold-out shows at Zanies and Rosemont. Big shout-out to Zanies, by the way, for letting us go in there and completely transform that room and take it over. But that night was just, the crowds from the first joke were on fire. You know, it was one of the best performances I had ever given. So that, I think, was the best part. And then I think, you know, the part that's just tedious was the edit, right? Because you kind of, then you get into the nuts and bolts and all the minutiae of, oh, God, is this camera angle right for this joke? Is this? And you forget that, you know, people are not, well, it's like in TV. You forget that people are just watching it casually as a viewer and not with this technical eye that you're looking at it with. So I think that was, you know, I wouldn't say there was any part of it that I disliked. You know, it's all been a pretty great process. You know, the challenging thing is, you know, starting from scratch. I think that's kind of where I'm at now, where that's exciting too.
How did you get over the initial reaction from people when you first started doing stand up of, oh, that's the guy from TV? And is there a difference between who Pat is on TV and who he can be on stage?
I think there's a little, I think the version of me on stage is, you know, I don't think you see all of me on, I don't think you see all of what I can do on TV because, you know, we all have our roles and we all have our allotted time that we have to do what we do. And on stage, I think, you know, I'm able to really stretch it out a lot more. But yeah, it's an interesting point you make because I think a lot of, you know, not a lot, but some comics have that luxury of being able to go into a club and a lot of people not knowing who they are, and they can kind of play around a little bit and have fun. Like, there are still people in this market who have no idea that I do stand-up because, I don't have a Netflix special. I don't have a Comedy Central special. So there are times where I think, you know, like, I'll be at the Laugh Factory or Zany's just working out some new material, and there are people in there that are seeing me for the first time, and you're like, ah, geez, I don't know if I want this to be the very first representation of my stand-up that they see, you know? But you got to get over it because it's part of the process, and you got to just think about what you're working towards, right? So I would say that's still something that's not great. It's not ideal, you know, but it's just part of the deal.
I enjoyed in the special that you would at times challenge the audience with, yeah, I'm talking to you about these sorts of issues, and I know where I'm at. Was that something that was scripted, or did you just feel out the audience and knew how to play off of it?
Well, are you talking about like the Trump thing when I said,
yeah,
I know half of you voted for him, I'm in the suburbs?
Yes.
I think that was, it's not necessarily scripted per se, but it was anticipated. I think a lot of the shows that I do, I'm not I'm very much not a partisan comic. And, you know, it's not to say I don't have beliefs and ideals, you know, off stage, but on stage, I'm kind of an equal opportunity attacker. And I think the crowd that attracts is a pretty mixed crowd, especially because I think a lot of people who know me from GN and who know me from my show are pretty split politically. So I always know there's a pretty good chance that half the people there, you know, voted one way and half the people voted the other way. That's just not, you know, for me, I don't know. I feel like, you know, a lot of the political humor and a lot of the partisan stuff, I feel like it's pretty low hanging fruit. I feel like there are very few comedians, right or left, that I see take a hyper partisan stand that really back it up with really great jokes and not just talking points that get their crowd in a frenzy.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, I think there are some that do it really well, and there's some that, you're right, where they aren't doing it as well as maybe they could when it comes to discussing some of these things. For you now, like, what's next? Like, because now I'm like, look, we've seen you do Man of the People, and I thought that was such a really aggressive swing, and I love that you got to do it, and I love that Channel 9 was even interested in letting you do it. And there's part of me that's like, Pat would be perfect for a sitcom. Is that something that you want, or is the creativity of doing stand-up specials like the next frontier for you?
Yeah, I think, listen, I have a, I'm in a really, really good position with my day job, right? I love stand-up, but WGN is what keeps the lights on in my house. Stand-up ain't paying my mortgage yet, Lawrence. I don't know if you know, but I released this special for free. I think, you know, all that kind of stuff sounds good. I think my immediate goal with the special is for it to reach enough people and for it to reach a big enough audience nationally that, you know, I can travel every weekend or every couple weekends a month and sell out clubs across the country. That's kind of the goal for me. And then if anything came of that, fantastic, you know, but I think, you know, I love my day job. I'm not going to do anything that would jeopardize that or take away from that. But I would definitely, if there's stuff here, if there's things that shoot here that they were interested in me for doing, yeah, I'd obviously totally be interested in that.
All right, so this is like a super inside and probably too personal / professional of a question for me to ask you. But let's say hypothetically that the Today Show says, man, that's a really funny comedian. We need to get him on the air. Would Channel 9 let you go on the Today Show knowing that it would be on up against your show?
What do you mean, to go on and promote it on the Today Show?
Yes.
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, I don't think they'd go for that. I thought you were going to ask me if the Today Show wanted me to work for them, but then I'm guessing in your head you were like, there's no way the Today Show would take a risk on this maniac.
No, that, are you kidding me? Like, trust me. Like, I think that any of the crew that's already there in the morning would be great doing that stuff nationally. They don't do sports in the morning, which I'm sure would be totally fine with you.
Right. I don't know, man. The Today Show and Good Morning America, they're very buttoned down. I don't know how I would go over with that crowd.
I feel like you and Strahan could do some fun stuff. Maybe it's hour three. Like, maybe it's you and Jenna and Hoda. Like, maybe
Listen, I could throw back some wine and pretend like I read books on TV. That's fine. Show me where to go.
That seems like a great thing. How can people view the hour special?
The hour special is on my YouTube page. You can just search my name on YouTube or youtube.com/PatTomasulo comedy, or it's linked to it on my website, PatTomasulo.com.
I've seen Pat live. I watched this special. He is an extremely funny comedian. You're going to love this special. What a time to be alive. Just search it on YouTube. You'll be able to find it. We just tweeted out the link on the Score account as well if you would like to see it. Pat, congratulations on this, man. You should be really proud of it, and thank you for being on my show.
Lawrence, you're a good man. You are a true pro, and I hope to see more of you soon.
I hope that is the case. That is Pat Tomasulo. Channel 9. I remember, so one of my good friends, a dude named Dave Hellum. Dave is a comedian. He's from Chicago. He works in L.A. He's written on a bunch of shows that you think are funny, and he does a show once a month back here in Chicago at North Bar. And it's some of the best local comedians. Shout out to Joey Villagomez, Erica Nicole Clark. And a couple times I've gone in there, Pat has been in there doing work, like doing a 15-minute set. He's hilarious. I saw Pat. He did a Christmas show. Him and John Vincent, our friend John Vincent, did like a comedy singing, like it was old school. And, you know, John, he's such an amazing singer. He always wants to hug you, too, and that's good. He likes to spread love like Kermit the Frog, and I dig that. But Pat is hilarious, and especially for those of us of a certain age, like Pat and I are in our mid-40s, I think you'll enjoy it. There's a lot of good stuff in there about relationships and how he's happy that he's married. Because they are pegging out here, Ray. You got to be careful. If you back in these streets, understand, there's some new stuff that maybe they weren't doing before, but they're doing it now. Why are you shaking your head, Rick Camp? You know it's true. Girl, you know it's true. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Every day, these last 3 days, Ray has been like, what? What did I do? What did I do? I had this show in the morning. Those two guys are not crazy people. And now I work for this crazy man. He wants to talk about fruit at baseball games and do Milli Vanilli jokes. I'm sorry, Ray, but this is how it's going to go. So you need to be ready. Sometimes I just get off the tracks. I'll get back on them when it's appropriate. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Bulls last night. And there's a couple of Bears things that you need to hear, including from the general manager, Ryan Poles. We will discuss that next here on The Score.
Life can feel overwhelming, but you don't have to go through it alone. On my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Brayton, I share openly and vulnerably about everything life brings us and what we can learn by living with our hearts a little bit more open. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on self-care, motherhood, healing, and more. You are enough, just the way you are. This podcast is a reminder of that. Follow and listen to From the Heart with Rachel Brayton wherever you get your podcasts.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. It's time for the 2-Minute Report. 2 minutes.
What?
Not one, but two.
Oh, say less.
It's time for the 2-Minute Report on the Lawrence Holmes Show.
Can't wait.
Tonight, the Bulls take on the Washington Wizards. Dosunmu back in front to Vooch. Three ball up, rimming good. A kind shooter's touch for the Vooch. Back to Vooch, trying to get him going early. Jump hook right hand. Got it. And the Vooch on fire here. And he has scored all 7 of the Bulls' points.
We talked about it a little bit this morning, you know, at the breakfast meeting, trying to get him going early. I thought we had an opportunity to, you know, kind of play through him to the post there in the first half. I thought to close the second quarter, they strapping him to get the ball of his hand. So, obviously he's not going to be as effective when they're sending 2 to him. But he passed it out of the post. I thought he got off to obviously a great start and really carried us in the first half offensively because we really struggled to shoot the ball in a half. And I think his 20 points were really important going into the locker room.
Ayo in play to Vooch, and a teardrop is good on Gafford from 5 feet. And Vooch with 15 first quarter points.
We just trying to do a better job playing through Vooch, especially with me and Zach getting pressure so much. Once he get it, everybody else's job easy. So just playing through him. He was aggressive about the gate. We lean on that, and we got it going in the second half.
Left wing Vooch, 3 ball. Got it on Porzingis, and the Vooch with 20 of the Bulls, 49 points, and the Bulls lead by 9 with 3:26 left.
Just I was able to get in good positions. I got some good ones closer to the basket early on, and usually when I'm able to get those, it gets me going. Then I was able to step out, hit some shots as well. But just playing out of flow the way, just the team's focus on DeMar and Zach a lot, and pick and rolls are a different two-man action. It opens up a lot for the rest of us. And I was just trying to be aggressive, and my teammates were able to find me, especially early on, close to the basket. And I was trying to take advantage of it. And I got going. I was able to make shots.
And this ball game is over. Bulls win. Bulls win. Bulls win. 107-94. They sweep the season series against the Washington Wizards.
Highlights courtesy of The Score. Chuck was on the call by himself last night. Our friend Stephen Bardo is going to be calling. Is it the next 3 Bulls games, I think? Next couple Bulls games, Stephen Bardo is going to be doing color with Chuck. So shout out to Stephen Bardo. He's going to be terrific because he's terrific at everything that he does. The Bulls win last night against Washington. 107-94 was the final. I never felt like they were going to lose that game, even though it started out rough for Zach and DeMar. Zach struggled throughout the game, but I appreciate him falling back and saying, I don't have it tonight. Vooch did. In the first quarter, he scored 15. He finished with 27 points, 5 rebounds, and 4 assists. DeMar DeRozan found his game, and in the fourth quarter, he took over. 6 out of 7 shots in the fourth quarter. Finished with 32 points after starting off horribly from the field. 7 rebounds, 4 assists. He should have had more assists, to be quite honest. Billy Donovan talked about DeMar's patience and working through to to get other people's shots while his wasn't falling.
You know, that's the one thing about DeMar is he's not going to necessarily try to take on double teams and force things. He's going to play the game. And, you know, he was able not only to necessarily generate a lot of assists for himself, but he generated the ball to go to the guy that could make the next play. And that's, I think, what opened it up us when they started to trap him after he got going in that fourth.
And once he got going, then the Bulls were in great shape. And it was every win is important now, especially after dropping that game to the Knicks. But I thought they did a good job yesterday of not – it's like a – yesterday's Bulls game was like a pitcher getting through 6 2/3 with not their best stuff. The Bulls didn't have their best stuff last night. But they had enough to get the job done. And they got the win. And now it's like, okay, got the Clippers on Thursday and then Milwaukee after that? Oh. Well. Clippers have been playing better. Paul George is back now. So we'll see. But it was a win that they had to have. Before we get done, there is some football stuff. The meeting's going on down in Florida. Get an opportunity to talk to the coach, the owner, the general manager. On the ownership side, there was some talk with George about Arlington Heights. And it's interesting because if we go back even just a couple months – to their press conference, they're desperately trying to not look too far ahead, at least publicly. I think it's a good strategy. When people have asked, like, well, what's this parcel of land going to be? George has been adamant in, we're just trying to do our environmental study on it and figure out if we actually want the land. Like, we have to still close on this. I mentioned it when we were talking about it initially in January. They're in the inspection phase. Like, if you're buying a house, they're in the inspection phase. And if you spend $200 million on a parcel of land, you want to make sure that that land offers you everything possible. I know it's easy for us to look ahead. Like, I look and go, are they going to stay in Lake Forest? Like, as an organization, will this land offer them enough space to build their own space there, and then you just have everything in one place. Casino, whatever, like all the other stuff too. But he's saying, let's just get through closing first. Don't want any surprises. Amy Kite to tell you all about that. She doesn't let any surprises happen. Well, what about the two guys that were hired, Matt Eberflus and Ryan Poles? The big question about free agency for the Bears has been the Larry Ogunjobi situation. Ryan Poles talked about that yesterday. Take a listen.
Probably the most challenging thing that I had to go through was the Larry Ogunjobi situation. From a business side, it was very clear. I'm going to listen. We have a process. I'm going to listen to our doctors. I'm going to look at the evidence and go with what I think is right again for the organization. The toughest thing I've had to go through was emotionally draining. Was to deny someone an opportunity when you have this verbal agreement that's what's going to happen. That tore me to pieces. I sat in the back of the car and I had a conversation with the kid and let him know just from what my job was and from my perspective what we had to do. And that was hard, really hard, because I was excited about him. So that's kind of a quick overview of some of the good and some of the challenging pieces that we've gone through.
What happened with the information you got that took all the things that you knew up to that?
Yeah, I, like I said, you know, back at the combine, I can't go into details with the medical, but it wasn't what it should have been, if that makes sense.
Related to the injury that he suffered,
his foot?
Yeah.
So between Monday and Thursday, did you miss out on pursuing another guy who maybe would have been in a somewhat similar financial ballpark that he went elsewhere and you guys thought you were good?
I would agree on that. And I think I've had a lot of conversations and I almost feel like the process is flawed a little bit, where I wish we could have some of these images and some of the physical done before. And again, that's going to be some type of rule change. I don't know the process in getting that done. It's probably something at a meeting like this in the future. But yeah, I think there's a lot of people were hurt just with the whole timing of it. Yeah.
You heard when Ryan Poles was on this show, and I asked him to be more available, and I asked him to be more transparent. I think that he has been more available and more transparent in the first 2 months of his tenure than Ryan Pace was for the entire 7 years he was in Chicago. I hope that doesn't change. And what this is a really good example of there are things that I cannot tell you, but here are the things that I can. And not just hiding behind, well, we don't talk about that. We can't talk about that. What you got was you understood how he felt and what the Bears' position was on why they didn't sign Larry Ogunjobi without tossing Ogunjobi and letting you into the process, which is what any of us want, just to get an idea of how you think. So far, I think that he's been pretty good at that. Now, you're allowed as a Bears fan to go, they screwed the Ogunjobi thing up. I think that it's fair to go, the question that Biggs asked as a follow-up was a good question. Was your pursuit of a guy who we all saw get injured, did it keep you from getting another player knowing that you don't have that player on your roster right now? It's a good question. I thought Poles' answer was sufficient. He's like, yeah, that's fair. We may have missed out on players that we wanted because we were pursuing this player. That's all people want. When we talk about the concept of accountability, that's accountability. It doesn't mean that everyone's fired. You're not being held accountable. Everyone's got to be fired. It doesn't mean that. It means, can you step in front of a microphone or tape recorders and explain your method? What's your methodology? And so far, I think Poles has done that pretty well. I think Eberflus has too, including this is going to be one of the big deals over the next few months is how this team is constructed. And it's gone from a 30 front to a 40 front. This is what the Bears head coach had to say about making the change to a 4-3.
You just got to look at the man. You got to look at the individual skill set. Some guys transfer over to, hey, being able to move to a 6 and play a 9 and play a defensive end, put his hand in the dirt. And some guys just they can't do it. And you just got to be able to look at that. Then the inside pieces in a 3-4, you have the three bigs. You got the tackles that play a lot of – they play 3, they play 4-eye, which is inside the tackle. Then you got the big nose tackle piece. And those guys mostly come out on third down. And who comes in? You know, they kick the guys inside. The pass rushers come in. So we're already in that alignment, the pass rushing alignment. So we'll look at the inside pieces. We'll look at the outside pieces and make them fit. And, and there may be a guy in there that's a DPR, that's a designated pass rusher that you use more on passing downs. And that's who he is. And maybe he can play off the ball backer. I don't know. Right at this time, we're still looking at all that. So we've done that before, too.
None of this stuff is magic. Like, you're playing a 3-4, like, that's not magic. You're playing a 4-3, like, that's not magic. It's a preference. Either one of those systems is going to work. Eberflus is versed in the melding of the 4-3 cover 2 that Tony Dungy ran and what Lovie Smith then ran. You have to be careful, though, because the template for it, you don't have any really of the pieces out other than you do have, I think, an ass-kicking weak side linebacker in Roquan Smith. I think that he can immediately jump into that role and be successful in that role. But you don't have the alien playing middle linebacker. And what I think has become more important, and it became more important as Lovie's tenure continued, you better have an inside nickel guy. Because of what offenses do, they're in 11 personnel 67 to 70% of the time. And that position is really special. I heard Matt Bowen talking about this on Olin's podcast, which, By the way, if you have not checked out the No Name Football podcast, it is educational. And Matt Bowen, who played safety in the league for 7 years, breaks down tape like nobody's business, was talking about the importance of the nickel and how if you have a corner, like a pure corner, like a follow corner, like think of like Darrell Revis back in the day, that you can just say, all right, you're out on the island on the X receiver. That's what you're going to do. You understand that you have the boundary to help you out as a defender. The inside guy, the nickel, that guy has got to be good. It can't just be a guy anymore. It used to be like, well, we've got a guy who's a depth piece. He plays outside corner, but we'll kick him inside. No, that guy has to be an ass kicker. He's got to be able to deal with the inside and outside releases. So I still think that there are pieces that the Bears are missing personnel-wise, but it gives you an idea of what it is that they want to do. Man, that felt good. We got, Ray, we just got super football-y there. Coaches out here talking about 9 and 6 techniques. I'm over here talking about 11 personnels and two-way goes.
I know we haven't even hit summer yet. I'm ready for fall, man.
It's sexy football time, man.
That's right.
That's how we do. Take a break. Back after this on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score, Chicago's sports station.
I'm not very hard line, Terrence Trent D'Arby, on a lot of subjects. The one where I am a little bit more rigid than most things is with the NFL overtime thing. I'm just going to say this, and you can feel how you want to feel about it. Look, man, you've been out there all day. You've been out there for 60 minutes, playing the hardest game in the world, most physically taxing. I don't want anything to keep that game going longer than it has to. I was totally okay with sudden death. Like, get the coin flip, kick a field goal, the game is over. And the reason why is that you're allowed to stop people. There's no rule that says you have to then allow the offense to go up and down the field. You can stop someone if you want. I was okay with the change that they made. Well, all right, people are complaining. Now you got to score a touchdown on the first possession or the other team gets the ball. We were treated to something amazing that happened in the Buffalo-Kansas City playoff game. We were treated to amazing. Do you know what the odds were? I do, because Joe won a whole lot of money on it. With 13 seconds left in that game, it was 200-1 that they were going to be able to pull that off, and they did. The idea of everyone's got to touch the ball. I'm sure it'll be fine. I'm sure we'll find something to complain about. But I'd have been totally okay if they would have reverted back to first score wins. Get off the field as quickly as you can. It's a violent game. Parkins and Spiegel, they're next here on The Score.
Are you looking for a podcast about pro football that doesn't put you to sleep with an avalanche of analytics or insult your fandom with brainless hot takes? Well, hi. I'm Dan Hanzus.
And I'm Mark Sessler.
Oh, hi, Mark. And we're the hosts of Heed the Call, the NFL podcast you've been waiting your whole life for.
Heed the Call covers every game, every storyline, everything that matters, and we do it all with a touch of mirth.
Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score, Chicago's sports station.
I'm not very hard line, Terrence Trent D'Arby, on a lot of subjects. The one where I am a little bit more rigid than most things is with the NFL overtime thing. I'm just going to say this, and you can feel how you want to feel about it. Look, man, you've been out there all day. You've been out there for 60 minutes, playing the hardest game in the world, most physically taxing. I don't want anything to keep that game going longer than it has to. I was totally okay with sudden death. Like, get the coin flip, kick a field goal, the game is over. And the reason why is that you're allowed to stop people. There's no rule that says you have to then allow the offense to go up and down the field. You can stop someone if you want. I was okay with the change that they made. Well, all right, people are complaining. Now you got to score a touchdown on the first possession or the other team gets the ball. We were treated to something amazing that happened in the Buffalo-Kansas City playoff game. We were treated to amazing. Do you know what the odds were? I do, because Joe won a whole lot of money on it. With 13 seconds left in that game, it was 200-1 that they were going to be able to pull that off, and they did. The idea of everyone's got to touch the ball. I'm sure it'll be fine. I'm sure we'll find something to complain about. But I'd have been totally okay if they would have reverted back to first score wins. Get off the field as quickly as you can. It's a violent game. Parkins and Spiegel, they're next here on The Score.
Hey, what's up, Flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.